Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, January 20th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our two top stories this evening.
Zimbabwe's largest listed company, Delta Corporation, reports a 20% decline in sales as Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa slashes the 2015 national budget.
The news coming out of the behemoth company in Zimbabwe Stock Exchange, which is Delta Holding, it's not coming as really news, knowing very well that Zimbabwe economy has been taking a hit.
Resettled farmers who were hoping to use their 99-year-old leases to borrow from the banks will have to wait a little longer as banks continue to hold on to their money.
In the short term, probably what needs to be done is for government and the bankers to continue to engage each other so that they can actually come up with middle of the ground consensus.
And Zimbabweans in the diaspora are challenged to participate in their country's economic, social, and political affairs.
Zimbabwe's largest listed company, Delta Corporation, has reported a 20% decline in large sales for the period between April and December last year. Economists say this shows Zimbabwe's economy remains in a fragile state with an unsustainably high external debt and massive deindustrialization and informalization of the economy. In a statement released today, Delta said consumer spending, which is traditionally higher in December, was subdued. Economists say the government and private sector's failure to pay bonuses might have contributed to the drop. This as Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa announced in a government gazette that he has slashed the 2015 expenditure budget from the $4.1 billion to $3.5 billion.
Some economists are accusing the government of failing to prioritize issues that need urgent attention in the country, in particular industrial development. Last year, for example, President Robert Mugabe's office gobbled close to US $200 million, while economic ministries combined spent less than US $115 million. Economist Chris Mugaga of Economita Global Capital tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Delta's problems are not surprising.
The news coming out of the behemoth company in Zimbabwe Stock Exchange, which is Delta Holding, it's not coming as really news, knowing very well that Zimbabwe economy has been taking a hit. So knowing very well that Delta Holding is considered one of the barometers, especially of the demand for consumables within Zimbabwe's market. I'm quite very aware that there is an economic slowdown in the economy. The aggregate demand has gone down so significantly.
Minister Chinamasa has also revised downwards his 2015 budget expenditure from 4.1 billion to 3.5 billion. What is your take on this move?
After thorough research and consideration of a number of macroeconomic sectors, I think it's a case not only of the minister making a climb down, but of becoming much more real with the economy, as we know for sure that this is an economy which is on a cliff edge, with most of the levers for economic growth quite very suffocated. I think you are aware that regardless of the global prices of oil going down to about $47 per barrel, Zimbabweans are not necessarily feeling the benefits. After the very minister raised the import duty for oil by 10 cents, and this is a kind of a compensatory effect on the initial reduction. The reason why he's levying duty on the petrol is simply because he is fighting hard to make sure he does away with tax evasion, which is rampant in Zimbabwe. And this is a sign that the government is in a cash to situation where it can't do anything except to continue levying taxes on anything whose demand is almost inelastic.
That was Econometer Global Capital Economist and founder Chris Mugaga speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meanwhile, permanent secretaries in various government ministries today met a delegation from the Chinese International Cooperation Center of National Development and Reform Commission at the Mitchells Hotel to discuss economic cooperation between Harare and Beijing. The Office of the President and Cabinet is organizing the meeting. Last year, Zimbabwe and China signed what they dubbed mega deals to revive Harare's economy, but nothing has materialized so far to change the lives of the ordinary person.
Anxiety levels are increasing within the white commercial farmers community following new threats from acting President Emmerson Mnangagwa that the government will soon intensify land grabs. Mr. Mnangagwa made this statement in a speech in his Chirumanzu, Zimbabwe constituency, where he bade them farewell following his appointment as vice president. A sitting vice president is not allowed by the constitution to represent a constituency.
Mr. Mnangagwa reportedly said the fresh farm seizures will target white farmers, black multiple farm owners, and will reduce farm sizes. This comes amid reports that some indigenous farmers who grabbed white commercial farms are partnering with the former commercial farmers or being used as fronts. For example, the state-controlled Sunday Mail reported that former ZANU-PF Administrative Secretary Didmus Mutasa owns 15 farms, which the newspaper alleged he parcelled out to other people. We spoke to Commercial Farmers Union spokesperson Hendrik Olivier, who says the future looks bleak for the few remaining white farmers in the country.
It's concerning that we hear these statements, but my assumption is that they would like to conduct a land audit to identify where all the land is and see what land they can then distribute further.
But what is the current situation regarding white commercial farmers?
The situation in the country is that there are still a few white commercial farmers that are farming. They are not farming on the original land holdings. They are farming partially on land that they've been told that they can farm on, smaller sections of the original farm. And that also the current situation as we speak now is in certain areas of the country we are experiencing problems where it would appear people are going around, beneficiaries accompanied by lands officials, and instructing the farmers to vacate within a certain period of time their farms. In other areas, they are also being told that this is the last crop that you will produce and that you must be off, for example, say by April this year.
So in terms of numbers, do you have an idea how many whites still remain on their farms?
There are most probably very much less than 300 throughout the country of farmers still on their land. And I must stress, Mr. Gondo, this is not their original farm sizes. This is downsized portions of farm, people farming on other farms. This is not their original farm holdings.
Hendrik Olivier is the spokesman of the Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union. He spoke with Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
Meanwhile, resettled farmers who were hoping to use their 99-year-old leases to borrow from the banks will have to wait a little longer as banks are holding on to their money, saying a number of outstanding issues need to be addressed before they can consider accepting the leases as collateral. The Herald newspaper today quoted Bankers Association of Zimbabwe Executive Director Raj Biam as saying, quote, "There are areas still to be resolved between the government and the banks." Sources say the major issue is the issue of land ownership, since all land in the country now belongs to the government, while the farmers will have to use improvements on the land to enable them to borrow from banks. Agriculture Minister Douglas Mombeshora recently announced that the government had addressed some outstanding issues previously raised by banks over the leases. Economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe told Studio 7 that the only way the government can deal with this issue is to give the farmers title deeds and not leases.
In the short term, probably what needs to be done is for governments and the bankers to continue to engage each other so that they can actually come up with a middle-of-the-ground consensus position that takes into account the concerns of the beings. It also takes into account the circumstances of our farmers that have received land under the land reform program of the government. I think in the short term, I think that's probably the way forward. Obviously, some of the concerns that are being raised by drinkers from a legal point of view, these are very valid points. But also maybe it would be important to also emphasize that there are some farmers actually who are managing to get loans from banks on the back of their well-developed agricultural business plans and proposals, financial statements, cash flow statements, even balance sheets.
What is stopping the government from giving these farmers title deeds to enable them to borrow from banks?
What it implies when you give farmers title deeds is that you actually create a land market. And when you create a land market, it means you make land transferable. And when you make land transferable, you actually then even deal with some of the concerns of the bankers. So I think the reason why the government does not want to create that land market is because they fear that the former erstwhile white farmers will buy the land and come back and begin to produce or to do agriculture.
That was economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe in Harare.
The Harare Residents Trust says it is disappointed by Harare City Council's failure to deliver as the capital continues to lose its shine. This despite the council collecting huge amounts of money from residents in rates every month. Many are, however, refusing to pay rates, citing lack of proper services. Director Precious Shumba of the Harare Residents Trust says his organization is starting a campaign urging residents to pay a minimum payment of $10 monthly to help the city delivery services. Shumba says although the council has been receiving monthly payments, some of the funds are alleged to have been mismanaged, with most funds going to pay huge salaries and buying expensive cars for senior managers. Efforts to get comment from Harare City Council officials were unsuccessful as no one was answering their phones. Shumba spoke to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye earlier on.
We are simply responding to their arrogance, and because we would want them to realize that the residents are the owners of the city and have the right to withhold their funds. These people are not appreciating the struggles that the residents are experiencing. So the best way to do this is to convey a serious message to council management and councillors that the residents will no longer stand back and observe them looting public resources. Residents are taking charge of their own affairs. And we are simply saying your pocket cannot be coerced to what it can't. If you find that you don't have any other money, just take $10 to the council, and the council management shall have to come up with a strategy of ensuring they have employees that the residents are able to pay.
But some would argue, Mr. Shumba, that your organization is encouraging anarchy. What's your view on that?
The city of Harare has already brought anarchy to the communities. And we are simply saying we are responding to their arrogance. We want to convey a very simple message that treat residents fairly and transparently. Let us have the water that they have promised. Let us have our roads repaired and adequately maintained. Because the residents that are paying are not getting value for their money.
That was Harare Residents Trust Director Precious Shumba speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Zimbabwe's diaspora challenged to participate in the country's economic revival.
A But first, a look at world and African news.
Voters in Zambia are casting ballots today in an election to replace a later President Michael Sata, who died in October. There are 11 candidates on the ballot, but the top contenders are Defence Minister Edgar Lungu of Mr. Sata's Patriotic Front Party and Hakainde Hichilema, who heads the opposition United Party for National Development, UPND.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has demanded the Islamic State group immediately release two hostages shown in a new video threatening their deaths, and if Japan does not pay $200 million in ransom. Mr. Abe expressed indignation today, hours after the militants released the video showing an English-speaking, black-clad person holding a knife along with two kneeling men wearing orange jumpsuits.
And the International Monetary Fund has trimmed its global economic forecast for 2015, with its chief economist saying the world faces a strong and complex cross current. The IMF is still predicting a 3.5% advance this year and 3.7% next year, but both figures are down 0.3 points from the group's October projections.
Binga villagers are up in arms with the government for not addressing the issue of teacher deployment, despite the fact that for the first time students in the region will write ordinary level examinations in their local Tonga language.
Tonga is the first minority language to be examined at that level, although the government says other languages will soon be examinable at that level as well in the not-too-distant future. We reached the former legislator Patrick Nenesbanda, who says the villagers are not happy that the government still deploys teachers who cannot understand the local Tonga language, even at primary level.
Yeah, my grievance with Ganda is that here in Binga, as far as the Zimbabwean constitution is concerned, it actually states that chapter 4, part 1, section 75. It says that every person, every child has got the right to education. And this person should learn his or her mother language. Therefore, if we are to be sent those teachers who could not even utter a Tonga word, how is that person going to teach a grade 1 or a grade 2 child? Yet we are trying to promote our cultural values in Binga. And the President Mugabe signed that constitution. Why are you today opposing that?
So, as a community, what measures are you taking in order to rectify the situation?
We are actually trying by all means to come together with all stakeholders, including those WPF also, who are also grievous. Well, there are some.
That was Patrick Nenesbanda, a former legislator for Binga North. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Binga.
Meanwhile, the Student Solidarity Trust, an organization working in the education sector, is complaining about current conditions in the country's education sector. The group says it is dismayed with plummeting educational standards. The SST says outside of primary, secondary and college level students, parents and guardians are also bearing the brunt as fees continue to be increased willy-nilly. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Student Solidarity Trust Director Simbarashe Moyo, who blames the situation on the country's worsening economic crisis.
Some have been retrained, some are now pensioners, making it very difficult for these parents to be able to raise the kind of fees that are demanding at the moment. And that to us means that we are actually sort of destroying the education sector.
But moving forward, what can really be done to alleviate this situation? As you yourself, your organization, is saying that over the past decade, the issue of education has continued to deteriorate in Zimbabwe.
Yes, the government and the parents have to come together and come to the common point, the common position that it is the state, it is the government, it is the nation that will benefit from an educated citizen. Having arrived at that decision, they then need to make sure that education in the country is affordable. What we are saying is that we are not even saying that people must learn for free. That is totally impossible. But we are saying that there must be an enabling environment that will allow students from various and diverse backgrounds to be able to access education.
That was Student Solidarity Trust Director Simbarashe Moyo speaking with reporter Tatenda Gumbo from Harare.
Zimbabweans in the diaspora have been urged to start influencing the direction of their country, either directly or indirectly, getting involved in economic, social and political issues back home. Alexandra Betts, Director of Refugees Studies Centre at the University of Oxford, told Studio 7 at a recent meeting organised by the Global Zimbabwe Forum in Johannesburg that running away and having nothing to do with the country will not solve Zimbabwe's problems. Benedict Ntlapo reports from Johannesburg.
Alexandra Betts says now is the time for millions of Zimbabweans who deserted their country for years to look back and start working towards a prosperous Zimbabwe. Betts says the experience gained by Zimbabweans from their host countries in the diaspora is very vital for the economic and political resurrection of their country, which was once called the breadbasket of Southern Africa. He says those Zimbabweans residing in other countries should start asking themselves critical questions about the future of their own country.
How Zimbabweans should be engaging with political issues back home, how they can engage in collective action, organize coherently and build strategies. And there were questions about what those strategies should be, whether it's realistic to try and get a diaspora vote, whether it's realistic to try and get the diaspora to go home and vote in forthcoming elections.
Daniel Molokele is a Zimbabwean human rights lawyer who has been living in South Africa for the past 11 years. Molokele is convinced that the future of Zimbabwe is largely in the hands of those in the diaspora. He is also challenging the diasporians to start making hard choices, including returning home, either as investors or to take up political positions in order to drive the country towards a brighter future.
We need to start to think seriously, to say deeply, where do we really fit in? What does it mean to be the diaspora, and how can we position the diaspora in the national agenda in Zimbabwe in such a way that Zimbabwe benefits, to say, how can we be integrated back as contributors to the development agenda?
Another Zimbabwean national, Godfrey Piri, says he would love to see some capable Zimbabweans in the diaspora, most of whom have continued to read, earning vital skills and knowledge, being groomed to one day lead the country. Piri is challenging Zimbabweans in the diaspora to never give up on their country.
Since the GNU, people have lost hope. And what we have been looking at so far, it's a matter of building up the platforms where Zimbabweans are also seen to be taking some kind of responsibility in other challenges which they face, and then participating somehow in the development of the country.
Meanwhile, the majority of Zimbabweans who spoke to Studio 7 in South Africa said they are ready to go back home and assist in bringing the former Southern Africa breadbasket back onto its former glory. However, much depends on the policies of the current political leadership and acceptance by the people who have remained in the country throughout the political and economic wars of the past decade. Reporting for Studio 7 in Johannesburg, this is Benedict Ntlapo.
Samuel Dimairo, a young local entrepreneur, has been selected as the National Zimbabwe Champion for Global Student Entrepreneurs and will represent the country at an event to be held in the United States of America in April. Dimairo will join 30 other young international entrepreneurs for the coveted award. The Global Student Entrepreneur Awards, or GSEA, is the premier global competition for high school, undergraduate and graduate students who own and operate businesses. Nominees compete against their peers from around the world for the chance to win capital and in-kind prizes from sponsor organizations. Founded in 1998 by St. Louis University, GSEA is now an entrepreneur's organization program. Dimairo tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawie he is honored to represent Zimbabwe and hopes to bring home the prize.
I was nominated as a Zimbabwean champion, and that entails participating in the global finals in Washington, D.C. in April to battle it out for the global prize. So I basically got the recognition as the Zimbabwean national champion.
How does that make you feel as a young entrepreneur yourself? What do you think you bring to the table that will make Zimbabwe stand out when you do get here to Washington?
Very encouraging to get such recognition as a young entrepreneur. As an entrepreneur who started a business whilst they were doing school at the same time, which is the essence of this award. And I think that although Zimbabwe may be sometimes shunned by the global community, but I believe that the mass and scale at which we have created solutions and solved global problems is unprecedented, and this is an opportunity to shine, to show the world what Zimbabwe is made of and not just what they hear. And if you look at, there are many Zimbabweans all over the world who are in very key influential positions, even in our region, which just shows you the bright minds that are within Zimbabwe. A lot of these large corporations actually run or have Zimbabweans in their executive management teams.
That was Samuele Dimairo, a young Zimbabwean entrepreneur, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawie from Harare. And now in sports section, we're looking at soccer action at the Africa Cup of Nations, or AFCON, where in Equatorial Guinea today, where Guinea drew 1-1 with the 1992 champions Cote d'Ivoire. In another Group D match, Cameroon are battling it out with Mali. While today's games are fairly exciting, it is yesterday's Group C matches that had soccer fans still talking today. True to form, the group of death was loaded with drama. Let's rewind. Despite their early lead, South Africa went on to lose 3-1 to Algeria after conceding an own goal and failing to convert a penalty. On the other hand, Senegal beat Ghana 2-1. Sports commentator Muzwedu Hadebe tells reporter Ntungamili Nkomo the group of death lived up to expectations.
Well, I think yesterday's matches almost brought some excitement into the tournament. And I think for the group of death, as many people have liked to call it, they simply confirmed that indeed that is the group of death. For Ghana to take the lead through the penalty, it was an exciting moment. And we thought that they were going to hold on. But the ability of Senegal to come from behind and win that one by 2-1 was also massive, but not just massive. They also showed their quality, showing their improvement. They haven't been doing very well, but they showed their great improvement. And maybe as if to justify the fact that it is the group of death, all the teams then that took the lead in that particular group eventually losing, and South Africa were to follow suit. But a beautiful football from South Africa. Take away their defeat. We have seen some positives from them. They are now capable of passing the ball around. It's just that they couldn't hold their own at the back. And if you look at it, they missed a penalty, conceded an own goal, which was the first own goal of the tournament. And also the goalkeeper, a little bit maybe inexperienced, one would say, but overall a very impressive West South Africa. For Algeria, it was expected of them. They are the top-ranked team in Africa. They've been playing some lovely football. They have that unity within their team, and it worked very well for them.
Any indication yet where this tournament is going?
I think it's too early. If you look at the way the host played Equatorial Guinea, no one expected them to put such a good fight, but they did well. It's a match that they could have won, but settled for a draw. So it's proving to be very unpredictable, but maybe as we get into Ivory Coast playing Guinea, Mali playing Cameroon, we'll get to see how these teams play.
sports commentator Muzwetu Adebe on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo. Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about the diaspora community.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Zimbabwe's largest listed company, Delta Corporation, reports a 20% decline in sales.
Resettled farmers who were hoping to use their 99-year-old leases to borrow money from the banks will have to wait a little longer.
And that's our show today. My name is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a very good night.